Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
I slam the door when I come into the bedroom because I'm the king of the castle, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Football Ramble. My name's Marcus Speller and Jim Campbell's here.
Hello.
Luke Moore's here.
All right.
And the manager's got hit by something for a change. It's Pete Donaldson.
It was a TV remote. A Samsung TV remote thrown by one Luke Moore, a man who's old enough to know better, quite frankly, older than everyone else.
Sticking up for me.
Defending Marcus Speller's honour.
A week later, yes. You did not see it coming. Played the long game and you lost it.
Yeah, you may have forgotten about the way you treated him last Monday.
Treated him.
But I find that revenge is a dish best served cold.
When I was looking at an email that Marcus sent me earlier on, the top of Google Mail says, why not hang out with Marcus?
Really?
And I thought, I'd do that, you know? Enough, mate.
Yeah,
twice a week. Like
that, so are you advertising for friends?
Clearly.
Twice a week, contractually obliged.
Hang on, why does it say that?
Because you have a Google Hangout. Google Hangout.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Well, change that and let's see the friends come rolling in. Now, if you lived on Steve McLaren's Hair Island,
yeah,
which we're all aware of,
yeah,
we've all seen that Hair Island of
we're
his.
We're all a big fan.
Population, yep. Steve.
If you lived on Steve McLaren's Hair Island, what would your job be, Jim?
Well, I think...
It's a tricky question.
As with any Hair Island, the residents of it will share a lot of traits with the host, the host head.
Okay. Yeah, the mainland, if
yeah,
you will.
The mainland.
So
yeah.
The mainland is the hair, the bulk of the hair.
Yeah, and the Hair Island is just, you know...
In the sea of balls.
It simply is what it is. It's a Hair Island.
The sea of pate.
Yeah, but there will still be residents on it. So I think, you know, McLaren... He's travelled around a lot, hasn't he? He's done a lot of different things in his life, and I would like to be the local travel agent of the Steve McLaren Hair Island because, as I say, he's travelled around a lot, and it would actually be quite a complicated and therefore rewarding job. You'd have to help the residents get around. And obviously, we know that everyone on it's called Steve, just so for ease of conversation, we'll just establish that now.
And the Steves from other islands are called Steve.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, this is one of the things, isn't it? So, I mean, it would have to be very, very intricate. For example, if you wanted to get one of the Steves over to visit the Netherlands, you'd have to set it up so that you could get them from your Hair Island over to the hair of a different player.
Yes.
Say, like, you know, Wijnaldum. So when he's going back for an international, or if he's got family visiting or something like that, so the connections would be incredible. You'd have to really work hard to get people crossing onto different heads and then coming back.
The main airport would be in the bulk of the hair mainland.
Come on.
The airport would be in the hair mainland.
Yeah, so yeah. You know, you'd have to arrange all the travel.
For
as
your
well.
Little propeller plane from the island to the mainland. Yeah.
And you could
Hairways.
Sell.
Yeah. Steve Hairways.
Yeah.
You'd obviously sell different language guides, which would simply be just guides on how to do the accent.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. And you could sell different kinds of holidays.
Like, What about visas?
I don't think that, you know, between heads, I'm not sure there's that much admin involved, okay. I must say. But if you're going for a different type of holiday, you know, if you want a big party holiday, then you go for Ronaldinho's head. You know, you have to coordinate that.
That's like Cavos.
Yeah, exactly. That's a big, big party town. And also, if you want to see some amazing sights, Paul Pogba's head. Yeah. Because I imagine the hair there is an astounding thing. That'd be a real thing of beauty. So, yeah, I would be the travel agent on Steve McLaren's Hair Island.
Yeah, and if you wanted maybe some more rugged terrain, you might go for El Sharawi or something. I forget. Yeah. I know he's had a bit of a spiky do before.
Yeah. If you're surfing maybe to Juvinho's, because it's all water, isn't it?
Yeah. And if you're exiled for any reason, just onto John Joe Shelby's head.
Yeah. I think it's worth pointing out, ladies and gentlemen, often we start with a ridiculous, nonsensical question. This one could take the biscuit. But I'm having fun, so we'll carry on. Luke.
I'd like to be ambassador to the Hair Mainland.
Okay.
So I would basically make sure that sort of cordial relations are kept up between the Hair Island and the Hair Mainland.
Yeah. We coordinate a lot. Yeah, I'd be helping you get over.
Well, absolutely. But also, Jim, my job would probably involve... if the Hair Island at any point was thinking about taking a vote to declare independence, maybe sort of just negotiate on that perhaps and talking to the man about it. I'd probably have weekly briefings with the Hair Mainland government.
Yeah. Important job, because any Hair Island is under constant threat.
Yeah. Sovereignty is very, very important.
Oh, there's a lot of erosion.
Yeah.
It's eroding.
Yeah. And from other hair patches as well. Yeah. Moustaches, sideburns, they're the natural enemy.
That's very true.
No, I think there'd be fairly cordial relations between all those at this point.
Right.
But I mean, you don't know.
They're all in the sort of the hair kingdom, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah. But you might end up with a hair archipelago. You know,
you could, Jim. I mean, that's very...
Identity's important.
Zidane's was like a hair archipelago, wasn't it? Like three-sided.
But I was thinking...
Was it more of a... Yeah, probably was an archipelago. The archipelago is lots of different islands, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I'm just thinking out loud, sorry.
Of course you are. Yeah, no, that's fine. But the thing is...
Zidane's was more of a peninsula. A peninsula. A hair peninsula.
Well, think about it. McLaren's Hair Island is actually quite prominent.
Yeah.
That is actually... That's a good Hair Island. Mm. You know, that's like the Isle of Wight.
Very populous.
Yeah, exactly. That is something to hang your hat on, if you will.
It's the Svalbard of Hair Island.
Whereas if you think about a very remote Hair Island, it was Jordan Lechkov.
Yeah.
It was very remote. I don't know if it was inhabited.
Yeah. Shearer. Was it charted?
I was definitely charted.
Okay.
Alan Shearer had one as well, didn't he?
Shearer did.
It's a big thing amongst the Newcastle United legends.
I mean, if anything, it's an allegory for the rising sea levels, isn't it, really?
Alan Shearer's was like Atlantis. It disappeared into the sea or something. It's gone now. It's not there anymore, is it?
It's away.
Yeah, it's
away. Pete.
Yeah. I'd be a documentary filmmaker.
Yes.
And this is what my film would be. There are many people who live on this wonderful, magical hair island, and here's one now. It's Paul the Blacksmith.
Hello.
He provides the islanders of Steve McLaren's head with tools and wheel bonds and larger items such as stoves and bellows. His speciality is case hardening, where bone dust is added to iron to make crucible steel. Paul the Blacksmith thinks Newcastle are a fucking disgrace. Oh, look! Here's Maurice, the baker's son.
Hello there.
He's hoping to grow up to be a bosun on the high seas and has already started his training. He's still had time to notice that Newcastle have 24 points in 28 games, though, and it's their lowest in Premier League history and the worst since 1986. He thinks Steve McLaren is massively out of his depth. Before we leave this magical isle, let's drop in on Beatrice Parnell.
Hello there.
She's the mayor's wife and a local governor in her own right. She thinks Steve McLaren has lost the dressing room, if indeed he ever knew where it fucking was. Thank you for joining us on our journey across Steve McLaren's stupid head.
We often say that you haven't prepared for an opening question.
Yeah. So I'll have the points, Marcus. So
this is what you've been doing all this time. 3 years in the
making. I've been waiting. As that hairline's been receding, I've been planning my Steve McLaren Hair Island documentary.
Drop a little hint out across the season. Yeah. Oh, maybe at some point we could do an opening question about Steve McLaren Hair Island.
He's trying to make up for Time Lord.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to be fair, that's a good production piece compared to what you guys put together three years ago.
Let's not revisit the unwanted past.
I take it, I've got the points.
Well, we haven't heard my answer yet.
Yeah, true.
That was the first time we'd heard that as well, ladies and gentlemen. But I don't think I need to answer. I think Pete's got the point.
Yeah. I think you should answer.
I think this
needs fleshing out.
I thought to myself, I'll just be combing the beaches, looking into the distance, wondering what else is out there.
Metal detecting.
Yeah.
You do a bit of metal detecting.
I know what'll be out there. What else is out there? The championship. what's that coming over the horizon?
It's a P45.
Oh dear. Well, yeah, Pete without a doubt has got the point.
Well done, Peter.
Well done, Pete.
Well done, Peter. Excellent stuff. Right, now we've all calmed down. Let's go to the Premier League, where football was actually played. Spurs 2, Arsenal 2, Jim. Mm. I mean, we talked on the preview show, and I think on the last Ramble show as well, a week ago, that Arsenal, they're not too canny, they're not too streetwise at times, but they were a bit more in this game. I know, as football fans, you've got to be careful not to suddenly throw out everything you've just said because of one game.
Yeah.
But actually going 2-1 down to a Spurs side who looked quite rampant at that particular moment, having been down to 10 men, of course, to get a point and actually probably finish the stronger of the two...
Yeah,
in hindsight, it's not so bad.
Yeah, it's a strange result because they went 1-0 up with a brilliant goal from Ramsey. But then, like, as soon as Coquelin went off, you knew they would go behind. The Alderweireld goal, they should have been stronger on that. Harry Kane's goal, that was just brilliant. That's one of those.
What was he doing?
You're just going to have to take that. And it was fantastic to get back into the game. But it's the naivety of being able to see exactly what's going to happen and then letting it happen anyway, being completely powerless to stop that with some sort of sloppy play at the set piece for Alderweireld's goal. And it's so weird. We completely Arsenaled it, but then Spurs it, so it was fine, and all is as it should be.
Spina had a lot of work to do, to be fair.
We said on the previous show that actually he's a good number two.
Yeah,
and he came in and played well.
I mean, he's an international goalkeeper, isn't he? He's not really number two.
I feel like I'm the only one here who wants to be a bit harsher on Arsenal, actually.
Well, okay, I mean, 1-0 up and they get a silly sending off. Yeah. And Wenger was saying to Koscielny... Yeah.
Well, especially Koscielny, yeah. The first booking was ridiculous as well, just to get booked for a handball like that is really silly.
And the second one, the player's not going anywhere. I mean, there's no need to do what he did.
I think he's maybe a little overcommitted, maybe way too pumped up.
It's a poor decision then. Yeah, he was a bit pumped up. But the reason I wasn't going to go too harsh on Arsenal, then I saw the quote that Per Mertesacker made after the game, which was... For a team with low confidence and no belief, we played pretty well today. Well, one, that's a bit chippy. Two,
I don't think it is.
Two, they didn't actually play that well. They made some poor decisions, obviously typified by Coquelin. David Ospina had to make the most saves of any Arsenal goalkeeper for 6 years.
Yeah, but they're a man down.
Not all of those were after he was sent off.
Yeah, but enough of them will be for that stat to be false without that.
False.
Yeah, but think about it. If they're missing a man for the majority of the game, that stat does not take that into account.
It wasn't the majority of the game.
But they're the majority of the second half, you know what I mean?
But, you look at the first 5-10 minutes. I mean, Spurs looked definitely on top on that one. And they weathered that storm, and I think that's why people lost their heads a little bit as they moved into the second half.
We should say it was a brilliant second half, by the way.
It was a fantastic second half.
It was brilliant. And the thing is, I actually, as a neutral... wanting Leicester to win the league, so it was a lovely result. I actually thought that Arsenal, of course, 1-0 up, Coquelin gets sent off, blah, 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 blah. That's the way the game's gone. I thought Arsenal, actually, to get back into that 2-2, I thought wasn't a bad result at all.
Well, my two final points I was going to make, which is the one that no one seems to really have made too much of the fact that the only reason Arsenal scored the second goal is because Lloris made an error, which it wasn't a great finish. I mean, Lloris should have saved that.
Okay.
And finally, regardless of all this stuff I've just said, and I don't expect particularly Jim to agree with me, and I understand why he doesn't, and I don't expect everyone to agree with me, but why is Mertesacker coming out and being almost happy with that?
I mean, of course.
Why would you... Have Arsenal got to a level now where they're being battered around by everyone in the press and everything like that, including on this show, and they're not playing very well? They were very close to losing their fourth game in a row okay, and they managed to put it out of the fire.
Very close isn't irrelevant.
But what I'm saying is that's fine. It's not really irrelevant because the broader point I'm trying to make is that they shouldn't be happy with the form they're currently in.
No, but they pulled it out of the fire there.
They've scraped 10 men.
They
scraped a draw against their fiercest rivals, and their captain is coming out saying, "Oh, we're happy with that."
But I mean, the word "scraped" there is a bit of a weasel word as well, because they're down to 10 men. That is a good result in the circumstances. The circumstances are of Arsenal's own doing. I take that. That's silly.
It's their own fault.
The Lloris thing as well. Sanchez had like 3 men on him there. If you don't ask the question, you're not going to get an answer. So, you know, I mean, you can't...
I'm not begrudging him the goal at all. I'm just saying, you know, it took a goalkeeping error for them to come out and actually get a point out of it.
But they forced that error.
And the overall point is that... No, Arsenal didn't have a man down bestowed upon them. It was their own fault.
Absolutely, of course. But still, you have to react to those circumstances. And to a degree, they did. Now, I think I agree with you. It's not like everyone should be... I've not seen the particular interview with Per Mertesacker. I don't know if he was, like, shaking maracas and having a brilliant time.
But if he was, then fair enough. That's
Barcelona in anticipation.
Yeah.
The mugs.
No, one point.
But yeah, I think the thing is, Arsenal's confidence is incredibly low. They are being battered all over the place. And there has to be something that's a turning point and a catalyst. And this is frankly better than nothing, isn't it? Because it really looked like if you lose that game, it's terrible. So to pull anything out of it when your backs are against the wall that much, if that can act as a catalyst, great. And it may be that Mertesacker is one of the senior players. He's trying to basically work with what he's got to get these players firing again. Because with the running that's coming, someone has to do that.
I think all these points are valid.
I just want to make one final one if I may.
Probably it's only one of them.
The problem is I don't want to just sort of stir the hornet's nest for no particular reason. But
lies.
I wonder if another top manager, another top club, which Arsenal undoubtedly are, with a lot of players and a lot of quality in their squad.
Well, you say a lot of players. We only had 10 for most of the second half.
A lot of players to choose from, maybe, is a better way of putting it. Is it acceptable but just because they were reduced to 10 men, they let Spurs have 26 shots on their goal?
The Spurs are a good team, you have to remember that.
Way the game went, like I said, when all is said and done, I take the point that they're 1-0 up and they get a stupid sending off. But the way the game's gone, they're down to 10 men, they're away from home, to a side who are on better form than them.
They're a better form team, aren't they?
Yeah, they go 2-1 down. When Harry Kane scored that second goal, if you said to any Arsenal fan, would you take a point? Absolutely. And finished the game probably a bit stronger.
And also, Eric Dier should have been sent off. And if you look at a decision like that and you sort of go, why isn't he getting sent off? We're right up against the wall. So, I mean, that shows a little bit of character.
That's one of the what-ifs, though, isn't it? I mean, if Dier had been sent off, there's absolutely nothing to say we'd have gone on.
No, of course not. But I actually thought...
But Marcus, just quickly, I just want to put up on this a little bit more. Genuinely, because I believe passionately that a top manager...
Oh, I agree with you.
...should have been able to adapt. If you're one... The reason that just brought that into stark focus for me is because you just said the words, Arsenal were a goal up and had a man sent off. I'm thinking, what's Mourinho going to do then at that point? What is Sir Alex Ferguson going to do at that point? These other top managers in Premier League history, they're going to adapt. Mm. They're going to make it difficult for the other team.
Yeah.
Arsenal just decided to completely go ahead with what they normally did. Now, I'll take the point with Harry Kane scoring a world-class goal. You can't do anything about that.
The second and the first one was from a corner,
but it was completely avoidable. Mm. It was completely avoidable.
Especially, if you're down to 10 men, set pieces in particular, you've got to have a plan.
You've got to be solid on the set pieces. And even the second goal with Harry Kane, they could have dealt with it better in the build-up, couldn't they? They could have dealt with it better in the build-up.
Okay, fine. Yeah, absolutely right. But they got out of there with a point. And looking at Spurs, I think Spurs probably scored the second one too early, because I think it was about 76 minutes in they scored, and it was suddenly, here we go, going to win the league and all that kind of talk. And it was such a euphoric moment for Watt-Allain, especially Kane, and especially because it was such a great goal and he whipped the mask off in celebration, which was nice to see. But then they had, say, the best part of 15 minutes to play out the rest of the game. How do you approach that when you're 2-1 up and your tails are up? Do you go for that third goal and you think, actually, we don't need it, we're playing against 10 men? If they're playing against 11 men, it may have been a bit more casual. And it was too long. Had they have gone, they scored the, if they'd have equalised and then scored the second in the 80-minute mark or something like that, you would imagine that they would have probably...
Yeah.
Marcus, the worrying thing for Spurs fans was that they actually looked a bit tired.
Yeah.
So they clearly are. They're drilled very, very hard. They're a young squad, we know that, but they work very hard and they looked a bit tired. Against a team like Arsenal, I know Arsenal had 10, but it was a very fiercely contested game, as North London derbies always are. And I agree. I think Spurs...
It was an opportunity missed.
But Sanchez
again.
I thought Sanchez's header dropped before he scored. I thought he looks like he's resigned to defeat. I was very, very surprised when he scored. I'm not just saying that because he looked like a defeated man. It's a sign of the quality he is. By the way, that's his first goal for a number of months, I think.
Yeah, in the league.
He managed to pull it out of the bag and finish it. But I think the reason, just to expand on what you said, Marcus, is that Spurs, the reason that happened, I think, is they were a bit tired.
Twice they've been the better team against Arsenal this season, but they in the league, and they've got 2 points from it.
I think it was a huge opportunity missed, and I think that those positions, they're not used to being that. 2-1 up at home to Arsenal, hold on there, and you'll be in within 2 points of Leicester, and Arsenal will be further behind you. And what a position that is. And Arsenal finished the game stronger. There was a chance when Arsenal broke forward, they might have done something better with it. And then obviously Ramsey had that chance at the end, which, was it Wimmer, got back?
Yeah, it was good defending like that. I mean,
it was great defending, yeah. I'm not saying what the hell's Ramsey playing at or anything like that, but I'm saying that it kind of reverted to type there in the North London derby, that Spurs got themselves in a good position and thought, oh, blimey, hang on, what are we doing? Yeah, they could have been a bit tired and whatnot. Then Arsenal thought, hang on a minute, we're Arsenal here, we're in the North London derby. They got back into it, and Spurs probably were quite happy to see the final whistle in some senses. But I thought, overall a point, does that really...
Didn't serve anybody,
did
it?
We said this on the preview show, didn't it? It's very likely to be a high-scoring draw. Not a high-scoring draw, as it turned out, but be a scoring draw that's ultimately not ideal for either team, and so it panned out. One thing that's a good point to make about the North London derby, I think, is it's always a very, very hotly contested game, and there's often screamers in it that sort of... kind of go a little bit unheralded because it's so high energy, so high tempo that it's like, right, that's a goal, carry on, just get to the end, score the most. And again, Ramsey's goal was brilliant, Harry Kane's goal was absolutely fantastic, and it's very much of its type.
Isn't Spurs, if Spurs had beaten Arsenal, wouldn't they have been on the same points as Leicester at the time?
They would have gone top, I think.
Because they've gone top on goal difference, not within 2 points, they would have actually gone top. And then obviously Leicester won anyway, but I mean, it was a bit of a missed opportunity, I think. But Ramsey's first goal was a beauty, by the way. His goal,
it was all he could do in this situation because the ball was slightly behind him, that's great improvisation. But yeah, that's one win in 1 point out of six from Tottenham now, and they are looking tired. And isn't Dele Alli
talk of him having potentially having knee and ankle problems, but I mean, yeah, I don't know how true that is. I don't know enough about it.
Yeah, well, we're going to talk more Premier League action after this.
Hi, I'm Frank Dubuff. You're listening to the Football Ramble. Football Ramble.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
When all said and done about the North London derby, the draw was a great result
for those Foxes.
Leicester City, they beat Watford away. It was a great goal from Mahrez. They're going to win the bloody league.
Stop it.
Yeah, Jim.
I think you've probably been a bit premature on that front, Marcus.
Nonsense, poopy pants.
I enjoyed the game. I thought Leicester were the better team by miles. Watford, I mean, as we said before, if Deeney or Agar don't score, Watford don't score. Yeah. They're both not in great form. Leicester had more shots, both on and off target, more corners, similar possession, which is, I mean, given they're a team away from home, a lot to pound the break, that sort of tells a bit of a story as well. Watford have got such problems in front of goal now, they really are. Yeah.
I thought Kante looked a little bit off the pace. I think
he's coming back from a knock. Though,
yeah, when King came on, I thought he really showed it up. He just, he let everyone else play and just sort of was a bit of an anchor, wasn't he?
Everyone seems to know their roles in that team when they've had to fill in.
But Pete, I don't think Kante was expected to play, was he? He only missed one game with a hamstring.
King scored midweek, didn't he? Yeah. So, and then he got dropped for Kante, which is a bit of a...
Yeah, but he's their player. He's their midfield player, isn't he?
He's played in League One for them.
Yeah, I think if... I think when it comes to Kante, I think, you know, if he's 80% fit, I mean, they'll keep him in the side. Mm.
Drinkwater was good as well. Leicester have Newcastle at home next, Palace away.
Yeah.
Now, I know Palace...
That's six.
Well, Palace, they've got to win at some point, surely.
Well, this is it, isn't it? Then surely, at some point, you would think Leicester will drop some silly points.
But that's
they will win, but they'll win the FA Cup at the weekend against Reading.
That's right. but that Palace away game, you would imagine Leicester would love that, because Palace are not going to play cautiously or defensively against Leicester at home, which plays into Leicester's hands. So Leicester should be top in April. They've got a 5-point advantage now.
Spurs have got the hardest run on that, those top teams as well.
Yeah. So in April, they are at home to Southampton, but you would fancy Leicester there, and they're at home to West Ham, a tricky one.
That's a tough one.
Yeah, but it's only in May, and also they're away to Sunderland, at home to Swansea. You get into May, they're away to Manchester United, then they're at home to Everton and away to Chelsea. A bit harder.
That is tough.
Yeah, but they could have it wrapped up.
The problem is if they don't have it wrapped up by then, United and Chelsea are not teams you want to play.
By the way, they need to be 9 points clear.
Indeed. Yes.
Well, they're already five.
They're five at the moment.
And they've got Newcastle and Palace to come.
11.
I mean, with a trophy going to the Midlands, it's quite a good place for the helicopter to be, isn't it?
It's very easy.
It could go north or south, couldn't it, from there?
Logistically easy for them.
Right, stay in Leicester.
But it's been in Manchester a number of times.
In between Manchester and Chelsea or London, you know what I mean? So it's had a float.
Oh, is it a conspiracy just to make it logistically easy on the last day of the season?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is incredible to think that last season, if you'd have said that Leicester could win the league at Chelsea... If you said that last season, bear in mind Chelsea won the league unless they got relegated. It's just ridiculous.
Everyone would be thinking the other way around. Chelsea got to give me on the last day to win it.
Mm. Yeah, you swap those two sides over, as we've said, and the season's nowhere near as odd.
Mm. it really is quite something. And I think that win away to Watford... Watford are having a good season, and it's not an easy... Nowhere's easy to go in the Premier League at the minute, maybe apart from Selhurst Park, Palace fans, but that's the way it's going there. And to get that away win, especially as the second and third place teams drop points, that gives such a boost as well.
Definitely.
You know, and there is such belief in that Leicester team and the way they all play for each other. We've said it before. It is on.
They can absolutely take a lot of faith from the ineptitude of the teams around them, as you're sort of touching on as well. And another thing that's interesting, you know, we were talking about how Leicester would react to, you know, teams setting up against them with Leicester being the favourite in pretty much every game and trying to blunt them a little bit. They are getting the 1-0s that they need to get. They're adapting to everything.
Mm. And they probably should have won that by more than one. They had a few opportunities.
Well, they keep passing tests. So when they got beaten in the last minute by Arsenal, they came back and did okay. Then they withdrew against West Brom a bit, unfortunately, and they've come back and won again. They keep answering questions. Yeah. And the position they're in, they can afford to pick up a couple of draws here and there. Mm. It's not a big problem for them. Yeah. Because the other teams, I mean, the other teams really look... Well, if you throw the fact that Spurs look a bit tired into the mix, the other teams are all fallible. There's not one team that's absolute steamroller in it. You know, apart from Chelsea, and they're far behind, too behind to matter.
And again, the point we keep making is that all those other teams for the nearby future at least are involved in other competitions.
Yeah, absolutely right. Completely. Like Arsenal got a very busy month, You know, and so they're having to change up all sorts of travel plans for this whole game and then the Barcelona game. So yeah, every other team's got problems.
I'd hate for us to get to the end of the season if Leicester could possibly do it, and we all sort of blame it on Europa League and all that crap. I hate that. Yeah. I'd hate that. It's rubbish.
Especially as you're the only ex-Leicester employee on the show.
Exactly. On the books.
You'd feel it more keenly than the rest of us.
I would, yes.
I'm saying that not as a reason why... Leicester don't deserve it, or it doesn't mean as much, as more as fuel to the fire that they could actually do this.
Yeah, you know, that's, I think, happened with Liverpool, didn't they? They came very close to winning it. A lot to do with that was the fact they had no European football at the time. Yeah.
I mean, Leicester could win the league and then next season finish 10th, and it wouldn't look out of place.
If Leicester win the league this season, this is the best season of the Premier League ever.
It has to be.
By some distance.
And I saw something today, I don't know how true it is.
The one when Man United had it wrapped up in March?
Yeah. Or that season Chelsea won it with conceding about 12 goals.
Won every game 4-0 and managed to be boring somehow. Yeah.
It's like they were Blackburn, isn't it?
There was
better than that.
Or the Newcastle Man United duel.
Cash injection.
Someone from ESPN, I forget who it was, and I don't know how true it is, but I'm just the messenger here. Someone from ESPN tweeted today that currently, as things currently stand, Leicester will be seeded in the Champions League.
Class.
Yeah. Which Man City fans will be gutted about.
Yeah. Incredible timing.
Yeah.
Leicester are going to find it very hard not to find themselves in the Champions League next season, which is insane.
Despite the administration at UEFA's best efforts.
We
like the idea of a wild card.
Yeah. Did you hear about that Leicester fan who cashed out? He put £20 on them at the start of the season. He cashed it like £29,000. Do you think that's what the Premier League will start saying to Ranieri? We'll give you third now.
Yeah, you take it. Cash out.
No.
Cash out third.
Third and a bye in the FA Cup third round. Nah.
Guaranteed group stage Champions League. Now. Take it now.
No. No chance. Absolutely no chance. West Ham keep winning as well. They beat Everton 3-2 away.
That was
what a game that was.
That was the most Everton game, wasn't it?
And the great thing about it was Everton were just waiting for the right moment to release the fact that they're reducing season tickets by 5% next season. They're really angry at the moment. Let's do it now.
Which is great to hear.
A lot of Everton fans are thinking, well, I'm taking a 100% reduction because I won't be going.
I wonder if you can get one where you only go for a half.
Yeah, that'd be good. First half, presumably. The thing is, Martinez isn't... I mean, we all know the circumstances around that they could have gone 3-0 up and missed a penalty and all that stuff. Yeah. But
I'm not sure that was in the box, you know.
It was very marginal, but Adrian's position as the goalkeeper saving the penalty was suspect. I mean, possibly should have been retaken, but it was a poor penalty anyway. But the Martinez thing, I wasn't going to go too harsh on Martinez today either. But then I saw something earlier which said that he said in the newspaper today, in the London Evening Standard today, that in his opinion, only Manchester United deserved to win at Goodison Park this season. Everyone else hasn't deserved to win.
He said that?
Yeah. Huh. And I thought to myself, well, all right, but I think you are King Bluffer, mate. Mm.
Is he including Everton in that?
Yeah, well, presumably he must be, because otherwise it's ridiculous. But, Jim, obviously he isn't. And I took a little bit digging around about Martinez and his role. And we all know what he's done at Everton, essentially. But his role at Wigan, not sure if you guys knew this, but... So Wigan were promoted into the Premier League, and their first season in the Premier League was 2005-2006. And from there, they became 10th, 17th, which is a dodgy season, 14th, then 11th. Then Martinez took the job in August 2009, and they went 16th, 16th, 15th, 18th, relegated. Okay. They also went from conceding an average of 51.75 goals a season in the Premier League before Martinez came along, and they went out to a massive 68.75 goals to concede per season after he took over, and then they got relegated. And that was without really improving their goal score column either. Now, of course, they won the FA Cup, which, of course, we all know, and that's a great achievement. But they had that... They didn't really play anyone good apart from Everton. Ironically, Everton at Goodison Park, where they won 3-0 and they scored 3 goals in 3 minutes. Do you remember that? The crazy situation. And fine, they won the game. And then the final against City could have gone either way. But if you take those two games out of Martinez's managerial career, he hasn't really done that much. And it's sort of, he's getting a lot more scrutiny on him now, a lot more media exposure, and you wonder whether he's just a bit of a bluffer. And like Paul Merson famously said on Soccer Saturday a number of weeks ago, you come out of the game thinking Everton were terrible. They're making mistakes all over the place. They can't keep goals out. And then Martinez speaks and you think, oh, yeah, they're unlucky again. Yeah. And it's really interesting to think, scratch beneath the surface, Roberto Martinez's management career, not as all as what
but,
it seems.
But does Martinez really believe that? Because the last couple of weeks, last 3 or 4 weeks, in fact, he's come out and sort of blamed the ref or blamed anyone apart from himself and his team. At no point has he ever said, oh, this was all my fault, I've made the wrong substitution and stuff.
Like Pardew.
Do you think he believes that? Do you think he actually believes that? Or is he just kind of, it is just that classic kind of Mourinho diversion sort of tactic?
Yeah, but Mourinho's diversion tactic is a different thing because he's actually won stuff. Mm. And so you can understand Mourinho is clearly a higher level operator than Martinez as a manager. I think that goes without saying.
What's good for the goose?
Well, true. Yeah, possibly. I think he's just a bit of a bluffer, and he's done well to get that job.
But do you think with Martinez, Martinez's sides, they do play nice football, you know, and Wigan were... kind of praised a bit when they were down there. They were trying to play their way out of trouble, which is quite admirable. And Everton have been very exciting for the neutral this season. They score a lot of goals. That often masks what you're saying, Luke.
Yes.
That Martinez, perhaps he has this aura about him of, well, we're playing football in the right way. We're trying to do things the right way. And it's getting to the point of, yeah, that's fine, but but you're not doing it the right way because you're conceding loads of goals. The right way to do it is to concede not very many and to score a lot.
Yeah, but I think, though, that maybe the benefit of the doubt he was given at Wigan was because, for that exact reason, he was playing quite nice football and he was seen as quite a young manager who's building his style and he's learning on that job. So clearly, he was, for a long time,
and
working,
it is a tough job
working
to
off potential.
To keep Wigan in the league.
Yeah, but now, at a club like Everton, who, you know, are of a bigger status than Wigan, with all due respect to them, and, you know, being a bit longer in the tooth in terms of his career, it's actually now is when he needs to put some proof into the pudding. Really.
I also think, with just thinking about the FA Cup final when Wigan won it, I mean, I was at that game, and it could have gone either way. And they scored in the 91st minute. They scored in the injury time from a Ben Watson header.
I think it was the 88th minute.
It was very late on, anyway. It was very late on. Yeah. And it happened about 5 minutes after Zabaleta was sent off for two yellows. And there was nothing in that game.
Yeah.
And Mancini was on his way out. And there's a bit
Man City were very poor that day.
Yeah,
but that's just one game, you know. And that was a number of years ago.
But that's the highlight of his career. It's the reason I bring it up.
It's a good highlight. But, you know, at Everton, he's clearly not doing a particularly great job. I mean, you know, Everton are 12th in the table. I mean, they are, what are they, 14 points above relegation, when really with that squad, with some of those players, especially this season, they should be at least aiming for a Europa League place.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's not so good, but West Ham, let's talk about them for a bit. I mean, it was poor that they were 2-0 down. It could have been 3. And Everton were down to 10 men at the time. Yeah. But they came roaring back. Yeah. And that man, Antonio, scored again.
Yeah, loves it.
And obviously, Payet. And, you know, what can West Ham do this season? I mean, they are now fifth. They are 1 point off fourth place. Okay, Manchester City have a game in hand. They're 3 points off Arsenal, for crying out loud. Arsenal, we've been talking about a title contender.
It's really interesting because I know there's a lot of ifs and ifs and buts in this statement, but it's the things I'm about to say are all possible. Like West Ham, given the fallibility of a lot of the other teams in the top four or five, West Ham could feasibly finish in the top four. It's not absolutely ridiculous. Yeah. They're 1 point off it, as you've said, Marcus, and we're in March, so they're moving to a new stadium next year.
Mm.
There could be a new team. They're in London. There could be a new team down at the top table of the English football. A
lot of money
just because they get more money coming in next season. They've got a 60,000 seater stadium and they're in the Champions League.
Yeah, the thing is with the 60,000 seater stadium, though, I talked to a friend of mine about this who supports West Ham. They're not actually going to make. They're going to make very, very little money out of gate receipts there because they're effectively renting it. And so they will get increased income from the you know, the TV money, like everybody does. Hmm. But actually, it's not the same as when clubs, you know, move into a massive new stadium.
No, but I think
and their revenue increases.
No, but it's the status of the club, Jim.
Absolutely,
you're playing
yeah.
in front of that many people.
Yeah, but it's a point worth making.
Okay, fine, yeah. But players will want to go there. This is the reason why Payet says he wants to stay, apparently. Yeah. That he wants to be a part of the project.
Well, Payet was a hot property, and he could have gone to a number of different clubs. And part of the reason he went to West Ham is because they're in the Premier League, and they're in London, and they can give him a lot of money.
According to the Brentwood Gazette, West Ham want Theo for £26 million. Would you say that, Jim?
£26 million. Yes,
that's the number the Brentwood Gazette put on him.
I'll answer for you. Yes, he would.
He's got a big contract. To be fair,
that might be a going rate by next season.
Mentioned that, Pete, but I read in the Standard today that Oxlade-Chamberlain's been linked with West Ham.
He's also been linked with Liverpool.
Wouldn't be that bad a move. I lose the Theo's. Sorry, to go back to Arsenal for a second. 335 appearances, 82 goals. Is that a good return?
No,
he's been there a long time.
Maybe he needs a move.
Yeah, but the thing with Theo Walcott, though, I know we talk about him a lot, but I think it was maybe 3-4 seasons ago now, I think he scored 21 goals and he looked like he was finding actually the player that everyone thought and hoped he was going to be and needed to be. Then he got a bad injury. Returning from that, he had a nice bit of form, got another bad injury and spent a big chunk of two seasons out. And it's just, you know, he's basically reverted to the player he was before he really
hit
form.
It
might be a confidence thing, but he takes a while to get his form back. I mean, he's become a bit of a lightning rod for Arsenal's problems. I mean, he scored that fantastic goal against City to win us that game. He's not as bad as he's being made out at the moment, but we certainly need more from him.
He's not having a good time, is he?
And the further point, just quickly to make before we move on, is that Theo Walcott is a man who's built his football career around pace. Injuries stack up, age catches up with him. What sort of player? He's not the sort of player, to my mind, that when he hits 31, 32, he's suddenly going to become a really cute, interesting midfield player. He's going to be on the scrap heap, isn't he? So if he is going to deliver, he's rapidly running out of time.
Certainly is. Newcastle are rapidly running out of time.
Do
you know what? We obviously joke around about Newcastle. It really is actually quite sad to see at the moment the state of the club. And Alan Shearer on Match of the Day, I'm sure a lot of people saw that. He was bursting at the seams to say a lot of stuff that he probably thought he shouldn't say. Or can't say on air.
Is the scene set for him to parachute in again?
I doubt it. I doubt it very much. But it really is like quite bad. And when you see the Newcastle fans singing, you know, we're shit and we're sick of it.
That's been repeated for the last 5 years or something like that.
I'm sure it has. But
it's more annoying that when they inevitably get rid of McLaren for whatever reason, whether it's this week, and if he's going to go, he should go this
week. But it doesn't make too much of a difference.
That's like 9 years that Ashley's been in, and there'll be another thing. All the think pieces will be like, oh, Geordies are ungrateful, and you know they spent the money this time around and all that crap. Yeah, but every time they fire a manager, they say, you know, it's really hard to manage in Newcastle because the fans are so kind of like, they want success. They expect the team to like try and all that money that goes into their pockets to actually bloody do it.
But you've seen how much fun it is being a professional footballer. You get paid loads.
But like, so that's down in 2009. They're nearly down like 3 years later, and then another year, 2 years after that, almost down. That was last season, and then this season, almost down again. For that level of support. Mate. It's crap.
A couple of points. One, you guys just touched on, it's not going to change anything if they fire him. And there's two good managers waiting in the wings. David Moyes is a good manager, and Rafa Benitez is a good manager.
Benitez going to take it, though?
Well, if you let me finish, the one sort of light at the end of the tunnel for Newcastle fans is possibly that, regardless of the opinion of Ashley, and I'm not going to sit here and defend him, he has actually put his hand in his pocket and they've signed some players. So one of the complaints that you used to make, Peter, a few years ago, and rightly so, is that they never sign anyone. They never pay for any players.
Yeah, but they put their money in to the tune of 80 million, 70 million, right? Like years of underinvestment. The youth team have no money. We don't have any pedigree in youth team promotion.
Fine, with respect, that's a slightly different point. What I was going to go on to ask you, just as a direct question, not a trick question, is that do you think someone like Rafa Benitez, if they were going to pay the money for someone like Benitez or Moyes, would they get a better performances of the squad of players they've already got? And I think the answer is probably yes.
Yeah.
So if they do it this week, it's not necessarily going to be a pointless move. It might actually be a good move.
But would Rafa Benitez, with his pedigree, want to take down a Newcastle team if it goes awry? Basically, at this point in the season, we're not sort of scrabbling around for our dream manager and it's like the dream appointment. And there are, you know, some pretty decent candidates out there. We're looking for a Nigel Pearson to keep us up. And then we'll be in the same situation next season when he woefully underperforms.
The answer to that is possibly David Moyes.
Newcastle need their own Gus Hiddink.
Shearer should come back.
No, he's not because they went down under Shearer.
Genuinely, yeah, I know, but it's Newcastle.
Director of football at QPR, Les Ferdinand. He's done his badges. He's done his badges. If you can't learn something about fear and performing when it matters by a black man who played in Turkey in the 1980s, I don't think you can be told anything in football.
It would be a disaster if Ferdinand was in charge. But it would be.
Why though?
Or what about somebody else
would you be up for a third coming?
I'd do some third comings.
By the way, Peter.
Do you know what? Worse ideas than that. Keggy back. Lot worse.
Can we spare at least 30 seconds for another very nice Jonzo Shelby pass for the Perros?
He did a similar one last week and Riviere was just half asleep. But
he's doing his bit.
Imagine being him, sort of turning up. He's a natural captain. I think Colaccini needs to leave the club.
Do you think Shelby's a natural captain? Because a lot of people have been saying, well, and Shelby's the captain and that's a load of
nonsense. He's settled in very quickly, Shelby. I think on terms of on the pitch now...
It's not hard to look good in that team, to be fair.
Well, that's a fair point. He's obviously got wayward intentions. He's got his own problems, possibly often on the pitch. But as a player, I do think he's all class. I mean, the way he's settled into that Newcastle team straight away, he just wants to be wanted. He wants to be able to play.
Yeah.
And there's no way. I mean, you could list 50 things before Shelby being a problem at Newcastle. Mm. I mean, he's probably the shining light for them. He was a shining light in that game. That pass was fantastic.
Yeah, it just positional awareness. Sometimes he chases the ball when the runners are coming in behind him, you know, if the opposition...
But with a good quality player alongside him.
Possibly. I mean, Bournemouth, they look as though they're on course for staying up as well.
It's three from four now. isn't it, really?
Which is great news from them for them. But yeah, Newcastle. Oh
it's
my goodness,
Sunderland or Newcastle, isn't it?
But it was fortunate for it was fortunate for Newcastle that Sunderland got Southampton got that equaliser against
that
Sunderland.
Was a terrible,
gutting.
Terrible couple of points for them to drop.
Gutting
there.
For Sunderland.
You know what? The derby's coming up, isn't it, Pete?
Yeah,
I think
it is.
After you've got Leicester, you've got the derby coming up, and we've said ourselves on this show that they've got a canny operator in Sam Allardyce who knows how to get out of a relegation battle. But you know, I mean, maybe that touch will wear off. This does start to happen. Football changes. These managers that seem really, like a really safe pair of hands suddenly can't quite cut it in the same way.
I do look at Newcastle and think it looks seriously troublesome for them because Sunderland have Sam Allardyce and even someone like Jermaine Defoe, scorer.
Saying, they might have some competition down there in their state.
I think it's 3 from 4, and if I had to put some money on the team to stay up, it would be Sunderland.
Newcastle's running is quite kind. There are teams that they could pick up points against, but
home to Bournemouth maybe.
Well, that's what I mean. That's you look at something like Bournemouth, even Swansea, they should be putting some kind of performance in. Sunderland as well.
What did you think of your mate Tino Asprey tweeting away with, firstly, sack McLaren is what he put.
Well, I'm putting myself at risk of an unfollow, unfollow or a blocking, but
he won't listen to this.
I always like how Newcastle players or ex-Newcastle players in the heyday in the 90s and in the early noughties, when they leave to slightly middling results, they really do remember their time on Newcastle fondly. When it actually was happening, they're not quite so warm when it was actually.
Listen, you've just been on block, pal. you're treading the fine line.
What I'm saying is that everyone becomes a spokesman when they leave Newcastle because genuinely they remember 50,000 people roaring them on.
True.
And it's a lovely place to play some football.
Well, he said sack McLaren. He followed that up with, better yet, resign.
It's the same result.
Better than that.
And then finished off with, wish I was in Newcastle now.
God.
New and castle were two different words.
Maybe he was just buying a new castle.
Would he fancy a 10-game tilt at the management
We've had Alan.
Oh, my God. You're up for Ferdinand. Any of Beardo? What about Beardo?
Imagine they hold a press conference, say, right, we're club legend, we're going to give him a nod for the last 10 games of the season. Everyone thinks it's Shearer. Paul, that's Tino in a big fur coat.
Riding into the press conference.
So, Pete, in all seriousness, some of the names being linked are Benitez, which I think is probably a little bit unrealistic because he wouldn't want the scenario of being in the Championship. Nigel Pearson is another one, but also Moyes and Rodgers. And Moyes or Rodgers are in a good position where they would probably take being in the Championship next season and
Rodgers
it back up.
I think Moyes is the answer. I think Rodgers has got too much of an opinion of himself. But I think Moyes would do it.
Who would you prefer?
But I mean, yeah, but when Moyes was at Everton, for example, he had a back line at least. Yeah. Newcastle just don't have that. It's in recent memory that that man couldn't get the best out of the players at Manchester United.
You know
United
what would be fantastic? And he would want the job more than anybody to screw over a former club of his on a short-term deal, getting big Paolo Di Canio.
Oh.
it would be whack a firework up there.
Incredible,
backsides. And obviously, did he want to stay on at Sunderland? And they were like, nah, you're all right, mate.
I can't remember. It was a maelstrom of conflict.
But just like when they put Steve in, like, an underwhelming appointment. We said that at the time. There were names like Vieira being linked. And that would have been quite an exciting, interesting sort of, progressive young manager. But they just went with the old fat white guy again. So it's just like,
well, if that's the case, I mean, I've got nothing to add on.
One side that looked like they are safe are West Brom. They beat Manchester United 1-0. They're 1 point off the top half. They're on 39 points. Surely they're safe, Jim. Surely.
Someone's made a decision for Jose Mourinho, haven't they?
It's funny because a lot of people were in touch about the way Matt is sending off. And the first person I saw get in touch was on Facebook, and it was Ben Stanley. And he said, and I really like this because it does sort of give you an impression of what football's like these days. But it's refreshing to hear Juan Mata say, and this is the quote about his two yellows and red, I could have avoided them and I take responsibility. Not many players say that these days.
No, it's his first red card ever.
That's true. True.
Him and Milner, like two nice boys. The nice boys have got naught. Leicester top of the league and the nice boys have got naught. I almost expected like Juan Mata to come back down the tunnel right under the pitch with like a leather jacket and a cigarette on like like Sandy in Greece.
Yeah. I quite like him. I'm more surprised to hear that Milner's only had two red cards in his career.
It might be in the league maybe, but
he's,
what,
I don't know. He's a hard-working,
nice
industrious, tough-tacking player.
But he does get amongst it, but he's
got very good timing. So he's not malicious, and he's also not reckless. So it was nothing vicious at all. But yeah, they're both matters bookings, and we almost don't need to talk about how bizarre and daft they were.
Yeah.
But it almost, I mean,
Well, the first one.
If I was deliberately going to get sent off, I'd do that.
the first one was a bit daft, but I understand why he did it. Because he didn't want West Brom to have a breakaway.
Yeah, it was the free quick equivalent of a daft little, you know.
Yeah, pulling back.
Shunt into someone.
He just took one for the team. The second one was ridiculous. Mm. Like, ridiculous. He swung a leg really like he was some sort of League Two player.
He looked like he was still thinking about the first one. Yeah. Like he's so kind of such a clean player. He's absolutely heartbroken to have been booked at all.
He ain't got it out of his system. It was almost Robbie Savage that got into his mind, like some sort of 80s body swap comedy, and managed to do it.
Mm. Rondon's on a bit of good form, isn't he?
Yeah,
he is. And I'd just say West Brom, they can now just relax, maybe.
It's just good to see Venezuelan players in the Premier League.
It is.
Yeah. Actually, they're playing Arsenal soon, so I really hope they do relax. That'd be good for us.
Is that the only chance Arsenal have got?
Get them some Seneca.
Everyone else just is a bit tired.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Pulis, though, pouring cold water over Man United's top four ambitions.
He likes nothing more, does he?
The ruiner. Yeah.
If you ever have a party, never invite Pulis.
No. He'll just walk
or don't
in.
Let him find out about it, because that's all he needs.
He'll ring the doorbell. You'll open the front door, no smile from him. He'll just march straight in, unplug the sound system, take every single alcoholic drink out the fridge, pour it down the drain, walk out again, shut the door on the way out. No need to see me out. Shut the door.
Ring his parents everywhere. Doesn't matter how old the people at the party are.
Yeah, and you'll look out the window and he's walking on the road, literally calling people's parents.
Who's bricking the punch?
Oh, Saido Berahino, when will you stop? Because it's going to be his party, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Absolutely right.
It will be his 100%. It'll be his party, and Pochettino will be there and be like, oh, there's no way I'm signing him.
Let's go into the Championship. Burnley beat Blackburn 1-0.
Says Steve McLaren.
Yeah.
Oh, unnecessary.
Good win for Burnley in the derby. Dyche's men go top of the table.
Yeah, I like the look of Burnley. I think, you know, if looking at the teams up in there, they've got a lot of Premier League experience. Look at the players who've scored the goals for them. Andre Gray, of course, is hot property. He's not really done anything in the Premier League per se, but he's scoring goals. He's slotting there very, very nicely. And then the players who are scoring goals for Burnley as well are Sam Vokes and Scott Arfield, who played in the Premier League with Burnley before. And Joey Barton in the mix up as well.
Yeah.
He would love one last season.
Of course he would.
Danny Glover in Lethal Weapon.
That'd be super.
One last job.
Yep.
Classic.
Although Barton, though, who's wronged him in the Premier League? Who would he like to?
Who hasn't?
Everyone. It's more about who he thinks has wronged him, which is every other living being.
Yeah.
Would it be more like... But if you're going to say Danny Glover, would it not be like Danny Glover in Predator 2, relentlessly going after the Predator?
No, because I like Sean Dyche as a Mel Gibson character.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I'm sure Dyche doesn't like that now.
I'm sure he doesn't, no.
It's not a comparison anyone wants.
Yeah, he's got Sandy Ballbag and Mel Gibson. Otherwise known as... Leeds beat Bolton 2-1. A Leeds United fan group called Time to Go Massimo.
Lovely.
Very direct.
Lovely that.
Very
rhythm to that. Cadence.
They staged a funeral at
Time
Ellen
to
Road.
Go Massimo. Time to go. Mm-hmm. Massimo.
Don't jump in when I say they staged a funeral.
Oh, sorry.
Let me finish that sentence. At Ellen Road to mourn, as they put it, the death of the club they fell in love with.
Yeah, it's very sad. I mean, if you stop to think about it, it's obviously tremendously sad what's happened to Leeds United. Mm.
And more importantly, probably in the season, I guess, was that that they won, for crying out loud, because they need... They're not doing amazing. Give them something to smile about.
Well, they beat Bolton. Yeah, Bolton.
And Bolton have got bigger fish to fry at the moment. Bolton are... We've just been given 14 days final postponement of a winding up order because a Dean Holdsworth fronted consortium wants to buy them out. But the guy who owns Bolton now, I think it's a spokesman for Bolton, I guess, has said that he hasn't seen the Dean Holdsworth consortium, he hasn't seen proof of funds or anything. Mm. So it sounds to me like they're still, at the time of recording, they're still quite far away.
Hasn't Dean tried to do that before? I'm sure Holdsworth has headed up a consortium by someone.
They always get like an ex-footballer to front it, don't they, in some way. So it's possible, it's possible.
Quite a Dickensian name for a man in that position as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But at the top of the table with Middlesbrough, they've got to be careful they don't get sucked in the playoffs again, because we saw how badly they performed last time.
Yeah. They didn't show up at all, did they? Not show up at all.
No, the plot thickens in the Championship.
But it's always very busy around the top end of the table there, and it's always great to see, because the games do come thick and fast. I think they're playing again this week. I think they're playing tomorrow night again. So, and Middlesbrough have got a game in hand, of course, as have Hull, because of the FA Cup commitments.
That's right. Before we leave the United Kingdom, let's go to the Northern Ireland Football League Premiership. This is quite incredible, really. 69-year-old Ronnie McFall has parted ways with Portland Down after they had a surprise loss in the Cup to Lugan Celtic. Now, this ended his 29-year tenure at the club, which made him the longest-serving manager in Europe.
He was appointed 6 weeks after Ferguson, wasn't he?
That's right. Six weeks after Ferguson in December 1986.
That's incredible, but it's such a shame he's gone now. Why has he not seen it out?
It's not ended...
as he would have perhaps liked.
Does that now make Wenger the longest serving manager in Europe?
It does. It does, yeah. McFawley won four league titles in that time, including the club's first ever one in 1990 and the last one in 2002.
A famous Europa League qualifying win over Latvia's Skonto Rigo across two legs in 2010-2011. Mm. That'll live long in the memory.
Well, I'm sure if it will falter down further.
Skonto Rigo, 15 times Latvian champions. It was a great effort.
He's Skonto Rigo.
Yes.
Has he?
He's gone to the championship.
Yeah, so it's a shame to hear about that. He was meant to leave at the end of the season, but obviously thought better of it.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, maybe there's something going on behind the scenes.
Maybe there
good
is.
Luck to him. Well,
maybe he just didn't want one of those really big, annoying, awkward leaving dudes.
Yeah.
I'm not coming in for me last time.
I hope there is something going on behind the scenes, because it seems that nothing's happened behind the scenes for that length of time.
No, exactly.
Absolutely incredible. We're going to go abroad after this.
While you're sitting at work punching them numbers into them boxes, why not head on over to thefootballramble.com and have a gander? You'll find more highlights than a night at Crystals.
Don't forget the Football Ramble preview show, sponsored by Bet365, which is out this Friday. And it's a good one.
How do you know? I haven't done it yet.
Oh, I know.
What have you got planned?
I'm looking around the room looking into the eyes of all my teammates and I'm seeing winners. Guys I can rely on.
Yeah. Are you all right?
I was stifling a burp.
Oh, OK.
That was what that face was for.
You look very reliable doing it, though. Should we go to La Liga?
Yes.
Yeah.
Real Madrid 7, Celta Vigo 1.
The standard.
Yeah, Cristiano Ronaldo's now the second top goal scorer in the history of La Liga, only behind Messi. He scored 250 goals in 60 fewer games than Messi. He'll love a bit of that. Yeah. No
I
doubt.
I wonder what the minutes to goals ratio is.
Yeah. Well, find out, Jim. I'm happy with what I know. If you want to do extra research, that's fine.
Doing your own time.
I've got a couple of stats here. It's not minutes to goal ratio, but I just thought it's worth pointing out that Cristiano Ronaldo has now scored 352 goals in 335 games for Real Madrid, and there's 530 top level career goals.
They were booing him. Were they? He had the cheek to boo that man.
Yeah.
Whatever you think of him, that is absolutely ridiculous in the highest possible
degree.
It's
because we all know a Cristiano Ronaldo, that's why. We all know one.
Little exercise. Give me the name of a very, very prolific striker and I'll punch him into the internet and you can use it as a comparison.
Pete Donaldson.
Lewandowski.
Robert Lewandowski, okay. That's what, you have to be the longest one to type in. Watch yourself.
Yeah. Go and punch it into the internet on your internet machine.
Dial it up.
That's what it said on the jingle. And a lot of people have said that the guy doing the jingle, they think's me, but it isn't. So
no,
that's
it isn't.
Why I said that. No. Lewandowski has got 239 club goals.
Nothing.
239.
Yeah.
Ronaldo's got well over double that. Well over double Robert Lewandowski, who's probably one of the... he is one of the standout strikers in Europe. He's got half the amount of goals Cristiano Ronaldo.
I mean, Ronaldo's been around for a few more years, but not to those proportions.
But
what about Jan Venegor of Hesselink?
I'm not putting that in. I'm not typing that in. But one thing I would be interested to look at is how many he's got compared to Alan Shearer, who, of course, is the great... Because I was thinking about this...
The old Mitrovic, yeah?
Yeah, the old Mitrovic. The original Mitrovic. Because when we were talking... when I was looking at this earlier, I was thinking about whether Alan Shearer's record's ever going to be beaten, 260 Premier League goals. And he got 379 goals for a club in his club career, and 30 for England. So a decent amount, but
with fat injuries though. Yeah, as well.
That's a great result. But it's impossible to make the argument that if Ronaldo didn't stay in the Premier League, he wouldn't have broken that record. He would have smashed it to bits, absolute pieces.
You'd have thought so.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I mean, the fact that he's being booed by anyone at any point, other than the fact that they just don't like the cut of his team.
Well, some people were saying, were they booing the side? I think that there was a few boos aimed at him because of his comments recently.
Yeah, I understand that.
Then he comes out and scores four.
And also, Shearer only played once in a title-winning season, I suppose, as well.
Yeah,
so he played pretty crazy.
Oh, Shearer's records is amazing. It's absolutely amazing.
Stop having a go at another Newcastle legend.
One of the things about Ronaldo, we've touched on this before as well, is people seem to do down his achievements because he's got this athleticism and because he's got so much ability. And it's like, oh, yeah, but it's easy for him, isn't it? It's like, well, yeah, because he's brilliant.
Yeah.
Well, shouldn't take that away from him.
One thing Cristiano Ronaldo hasn't got that Alan Shearer certainly did have and does have is, of course, an illustrious management career. I mean,
You're going to get lynched, mate. I'm a sellout.
One thing that Alan Shearer had, obviously, which Cristiano hasn't achieved yet, is a hair island.
That is true.
But he's got an island now, isn't he?
He's got a real island.
Which, to be honest, is much better.
Jim, he can just cover it in hair.
Luke, I'm happy...
Everyone on it will have hair.
It'll be model's hair as well.
I'm happy to admit that I do believe that Cristiano Ronaldo was in the goal series along with Alan Shearer. So,
yeah, they've worked together. They've worked together in the past.
They both played with Santiago Munez.
Yeah, they have.
The fictional footballer.
I think that on Cristiano Ronaldo's actual island that could become a hair island, instead of having cliffs, it could have quiffs.
Nice. Lovely old job. Overtook Luis Suarez this season. He's one in front of him, I think, in the top scorer rankings in Spain. Talking of prolific strikers, Jonas of Benfica, not Gutierrez, of course, that would be ridiculous. He's in the running for the European Golden Boot this year. I was reading something that Graham Hunter wrote about him. He became a professional footballer at 20 when he was doing a pharmacist college course in Brazil, and he was dubbed the worst striker in the world in Brazil when he missed three great chances, which came straight after each other. He went through on goal and he missed.
It sounds like the Brazilian media to go over the top of that sort of stuff.
You reckon so, yeah. But he's got Benfica on the verge of Champions League quarterfinal, and he was also crowned the best player in the Portuguese league last year. What I'm trying to say there, kids, is don't give up.
He's had the last laugh.
You could say.
Don't give up.
Unless
the
they get to the final and they will lose because they are cursed.
Elsewhere in Spain, Gary Neville's Valencia, they lost 3-1 to Atletico. Torres came off the bench and got the second.
Lovely
goal. He's scoring a few recently.
There was talk in that game that Gary...
Keep him on!
There was talk that Gary Neville was making substitutions because the crowd were telling him to. Did you see that? He had to deny it in a press conference.
Is that right?
Apparently crowd were calling for certain players and all this other stuff, and he had to come out and say, no, it was nothing to do with the fans that I made these certain substitutions. But I mean, let's put it in perspective. They've turned the corner a bit. I think they won 3-4 before that game. And obviously Atletico Madrid are a good team, so it's no disgrace to lose that game.
They're not doing too badly. Barcelona, they obviously won. They extended their unbeaten run in all competitions to 36. They broke the previous record for a Spanish team recently when they went 35 games unbeaten in all competitions. Messi, Neymar and Suarez now have 100 goals between them this season. It was their 11th La Liga win in a row. Luis Enrique was full of praise for Messi this time, saying Messi is going to be the greatest player as long as he wants to, but there will be a time when age affects everybody, so it won't be as long as he wants to.
Yeah.
I'd like it to be until he's 40 years old, but I don't have a scientific basis to comment any further on that.
It's nice to hear a football manager at one with his own limitations internationally.
Yeah. Completely at sea with scientific thought.
You wouldn't find Alan Pardew saying that. He'd be like, I do know exactly what scientific
and if you say I don't, I will hit you, Jeff Shreve.
It's only been the part that Pardew hasn't won since he had that drink in that pub with his Crystal Palace supporters, which is quite nice.
They haven't won a league game since then. They also haven't won a league game since those Americans injected 50 million or whatever it was into the club. He got very, very angry. I mean, can we really do the show and let this go without being mentioned?
I don't think we can. And it wasn't just at Shreve's, was it? Was it the BBC as
Maybe
well?
Maybe save this for highlights of the week.
Okay.
Because we've literally talked about Cristiano Ronaldo breaking records and Barcelona breaking records, and you've managed to go straight to Pardew.
Okay. If we put it in the highlights of the week, everyone's happy.
There we are.
Don't forget we have those listeners who only listen to the first 10 minutes and then complain. So
this week's going to be terrible.
Yeah, I know.
Up theirs. Yeah. Luis Suarez, this is brilliant. He's in line for a return to the Uruguay national team this week after serving his ban from the World Cup.
Wow.
From that ban?
I forgot all about that. Yeah, that's amazing.
Still doesn't play for Uruguay. He'll be back for the 2018 World Cup qualifiers. Yeah, against Brazil and Peru.
Maybe that's why he's been so good this season. He's not at the international match. He's not travelling.
Didn't have to travel. Elsewhere in Europe, Bayern and PSG both drew 0-0. All right? I just thought I'd say that. You probably won't be able to say it any other time soon.
PSG did not turn up, it's fair to say.
Did they know?
I watched the highlights.
What, so it's a 0-0? They should have got beat 3-0 then.
Hey.
Poor on the opposition, I would say. How about this? Let's go to America. The Major League Soccer season is back underway. Lovely. Federico Higuain scoring a bicycle kick. He's Gonzalo's brother.
Is he really?
I didn't know this.
No, I didn't.
I had no idea that.
Is that like Wayne Rooney's brother? Who used to play his trade in the MLS.
Yeah, or the Wayne Rooney brother who was a Wayne Rooney lookalike for a bit.
That's it, yeah.
I think it's a different one.
No, I think it's the same guy, isn't it?
Who knows?
Who knows? Who indeed cares?
I love a lookalike, me.
Yeah.
Patrick Vieira got his first win as New York City FC boss, 4-3 away from home. High scoring. Orlando City, did you see that one? 2-0 down. Injury time, 94th minute and 95th minute equaliser.
Killer.
That's brilliant, that. Yeah. And it's a 10-a-side thriller.
10-a-side thriller?
It was. Both sides were down to 10 men. It's what we like to see. And Ashley Cole, he made his debut in the league.
It's all kicking off.
He got his pants pulled down in a ridiculous display of defending as well.
They won 4-1.
Yeah, but did you see that clip that he's been doing the rounds on the internet?
Well, it's... Yeah.
It's like he
hasn't played football for ages.
He's the new Pirlo.
Is he?
He's just gone there. This will be fine. I'll have a bit of fun.
Yeah,
that's that.
The old adage like that you used to use quite a lot was there's no pictures on the score sheet. I think there probably will be in the future.
Yeah, there will. Yeah. That's what I was looking at.
Rich metadata. Rich content, guys.
It'll be
vines left, right and centre.
It'll be content, rich metadata, Oculus Rift... virtual reality experience.
That's just beamed into your eyes. You won't have to wear a headset then.
You'll be able to know what it's like to actually be Ashley Cole for that particular time.
Excellent. Before we go to the highlights of the week, how about this? Let's go to Ghana. Because the footballing powers that be in Ghana have ordered Avram Grant to come back to Ghana and stop gallivanting in Europe. Uncle Avi, hey?
He likes a gallivant in his tracksuit, doesn't he?
Don't he? Doesn't he? Yeah.
He's probably still wearing his Bobby tracksuit, doing all his dastardly deeds. I'm not doing this on the Ghana national team's ticket. I'll do it on the Pompey ticket. Yeah.
You get more bang for your bucket. Yeah. All right, Avi, that's enough. Big Avram. A parliamentarian in Ghana even said that Grant had been taking the nation for granted. That's poor from Avram.
For granted.
Yeah. Nice. No pun intended.
Is it poor from him, though? Because as loath as I am to defend the guy, he's guided them to the final of the African Cup of Nations.
Yeah.
That's one.
He's not doing his job.
Wait. Two, he spent 3 months in Europe. Last 3 months in Europe. But I did a little bit of cursory research,
you guys. Good man.
Into the Ghana national squad. And 20 of 23 of them do actually play outside of Ghana. And the only three that play in Ghana are the two reserve goalkeepers and a 19-year-old one-cap prospect.
Well.
Everyone else plays outside of Ghana. So the fact that he's supposed to be in Ghana... And the quote that the guy made was like, we need him to start monitoring for youth team prospects. Like, well, don't really. That's not what his job is. Is it? Yeah, his job is to manage the team.
Maybe they just miss him.
Who wouldn't?
If he's just been in Europe looking at Ghana footballers,
what else would he be doing, Marcus?
Well, I don't know.
Three times.
A spokesman for the Ghana FA said the Africa Cup of Nations qualifier matches against Mozambique are approaching, and another side, I forget who they're playing, and we need him.
I mean, you can take on Mozambique and win, surely. Mm.
To summarise, the fact that he was in England around the time that Chelsea was
working as a pundit on Sky Sports
is a complete coincidence.
He's on Sky Sports working as a pundit.
Yeah, I know.
You know?
Best way you could listen. You could that way. You can watch the Ghanaian players and have a few stats as well.
It's just that when I heard that Avram had gone missing, I thought I feared the worst.
Yeah, we all did.
He got a free login for Sky Sports.
Stay with African football very, very briefly. Cape Verde, Pete, are ranked the best African side at the moment in the FIFA World Rankings.
What's Pete's link to Cape Verde again?
I went there for 7 days.
I always think of you in association with Cape Verde.
But since then, their football's improved tenfold.
That's what I would say. Played a bit of beach soccer with the kids.
The Blue Sharks are the top ranked.
Spreading the gospel.
Yeah. Top ranked African side. Ivory Coast second, Algeria third, Ghana fourth.
I mean, how does that even work, really?
It's a great achievement for Cape Verde because their population is just under 500,000.
Yeah.
It's tiny.
Half a millimeter.
Half a milliband.
Yeah.
and they've got these horrible wasps that attack you.
Have they?
Yeah.
Is that related in any way?
Your pace has got to be great, really, true. If that's an issue.
Got to be hard working.
You can train him to attack the other players, the other team.
And now it's time for the highlights of the week with Luke Moore.
As if the show already wasn't a highlight of the week. we're cranking it up a notch,
aren't we?
I've got lots of good highlights this week, actually. I'm going to go through them as quick as I can. But genuinely, I can't leave that many of these out because they're all very good. Stuart McKeown is top of the bill with this. He says, I was sitting near former Newcastle goalkeeper Jack Anik. Is that how you pronounce it, Anik?
Yeah, Anik, yeah.
At the Port Vale game, as he wasn't in the matchday squad at the weekend. And someone turned to him and said, mate, shame you left the team. You'd get in the squad no bother now. And he replied, oh, yeah, you know, but Rob Elliott isn't so bad. And the guy responded by saying, oh, yeah, he's quality. But in any other 10 positions, you could get a game easily. this is a good one from Neil Maguire. He says, I was playing centre-half on Friday night on a team of Afghan refugees here in Berlin. He says, it's hard enough marshalling a defence with authority, even more so when you're trying to work out the Sunday League staples of blue head on this, it's still 0-0, we're not talking, when your left-back only speaks Pashto. And Andrew Monty replied, saying, bloody refugees coming over to Europe, taking our full-back positions. what else have we got here? Tom Ruzzolo, he says, City fans chanting, sign him up, sign him up, sign him up, to a pigeon that landed on the pitch at Villa Park. It took refuge in the corner at the end where Villa were attacking and remained undisturbed for over half an hour. Evan Gorsman says, the entire pub I was at cheering the loudest at the sight of Wenger with a head in hand. I was in the bathroom at the time and thought Spurs had scored. Which is very interesting. What else have we got here? Darren Food's been in touch. Darren Food. Great name. He says, I'd like you all to know that it's just 2 months till former FIFA president João Havelange's 100th birthday.
Wow.
Hashtag the good die young.
Isn't that incredible?
And I'll finish off with this one, which I really enjoy, which is from Steve, who's obviously a Newcastle fan. He says, my highlight of the week was the final whistle at St James's Park, when we were all finally allowed to go away and enjoy ourselves.
Oh, I enjoyed a very early season ticket throw.
It was.
It was very early in the season.
How does that fit in March? I mean, the beginning of March. Is that very early for Newcastle?
Well, the asparagus have come very early because of the warm winter.
And the daffodils.
Yeah, and the daffodils.
Because I remember, I'm sure I'm right in saying that McLaren was the victim of a couple of season ticket throws.
Middlesbrough.
So it's just McLaren.
And he took him to the UEFA Cup final.
Maybe in each case he had something on his face that needed wiping, and the fans were just being helpful.
But the Middlesbrough one, he actually got it thrown physically in his face, didn't he? Whereas the Newcastle one I saw was just on the side of the pitch.
It was on the roof of the dugout, so they almost hit him.
Okay. Mm.
My goodness. Well, a highlight for me, Jay Brothroyd becoming the first Englishman to score in the J-League since Gary Lineker in 1994.
Yeah, cool. In Iwata, where... is it Yamaha? I think Yamaha are based.
Could be.
Good for him. So he's capped for England, wasn't he, Jay Brothroyd?
Yeah. Just the one.
He's only 33.
Still got time.
Still got time.
Jim, let's have a website roundup.
Okay. So, are you looking for unbiased, informative football analysis that isn't afraid to ask the tough questions? Ooh. Get on down to thefootballramble.com where you'll learn how N'Golo Kante's importance to Leicester City's title challenge was scissored by the Welsh Pele, why World Book Day is really, really important to everyone, not just Lukey Moore, the moment Aston Villa's season descended into Catch-22 territory, and Random Ramble, a new weekly initiative designed to make you listen to our back catalogue whether you want to or not. You'll find Kelly at Kelly_Wells. Do it before she finds you.
That random ramble thing where Kelly highlights old shows. It is really interesting to hear us full of the joys of spring, browbeaten by both the game and each other.
If you're listening to this show in a future edition of that, hello.
Yeah, that's nice.
And Pete didn't mean what he did with that rifle.
That's never coming out. We've got you on that. Don't worry.
It was the one-armed man, and he's going to prove it. And also, wasn't Star Wars Episode 9 really good?
Yeah.
Oh dear. Any more?
Check out 44 Tunes on a Wednesday. We bring you the potted highlights of a ramble, basically, in cartoon form. So check out 44 Tunes, youtube.com/44Tunes or youtube.com/thefootballramble or football ramble, rather.
That's the one. And if you want to get in touch, the email address is show@thefootballramble.com. The Twitter is @footballramble. And of course, the website is thefootballramble.com. Instagram and Facebook are all rambled up as well.
Are all right by Marcus Bell.
There we are. Say goodbye, Jim.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Peter.
Bye.
And it's bye from me.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
was good with them, you know. And then we're way around the duck.
So if you fancy a sit down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.